Here's Jack Patty.
Good morning. Welcome into Friday. It's the fourth day of September, brought to you by Landscaper's Corner, celebrating 10 years in business. Your one-stop shop for all your landscaping needs. Landscaper's Corner, 1305 Old Frankfort Pike, 225-9433. Our question of the day, brought to you by United Structural Systems, your foundation repair and waterproofing experts, ifixfoundations.com, 859-254-7700. Was U.S. District Judge David Bunning right to jail Rowan County Clerk Kim Davis? That's our question. You tell us at WVLKAM.com. Tune in for the results with Cruiser and Crew between noon and 3. I'm going to get into this with Ray here in just a moment at the beginning of our program. Yesterday's results, UK's football season opened Saturday. Who do you like? 78% of you like UK, and 22% need to just leave, Ray.
12-0
Yeah, that's right. 22% said Lafayette's going to beat us. To heck with those people.
So you got the Louisiana
pronunciation. Yes,
Lafayette.
Was U.S. District Judge David Bunning right to jail Rowan County Clerk Kim Davis?
Oh, absolutely. Now, Michelle, are you there?
Yes, I am, Ray.
Good morning, now, Michelle.
How are you?
Good. Thanks for coming back.
Well, now you can. I talked to Michelle earlier, and I said this. We're going to talk a little bit about this.
Yeah.
You can join in,
please,
or not.
Tell us who Michelle Snodgrass is.
Well, Michelle Snodgrass is a superstar prosecutor in Campbell County, Newport, Kentucky, right across the river from Cincinnati, and she prosecuted one of the highest profile cases that we've seen in Kentucky for a while, and convicted a young woman who was a student at Paul Lawrence Dunbar for murdering her boyfriend.
And it was such a good show last week. We couldn't get it all in one.
You know, Jack,
version.
We had a number of people that called the office had heard about the mm-hmm. show and wanted to know how could they listen to it. And I said, well, we put the recording of the show on our website.
Good.
At LexingtonProsecutor.com. We always put the recording of it, so if you miss it or you miss part of it, you can always go back and listen. And we had the investigation part of this high-profile murder case on last week, and we want to get into the trial of that case today.
Thanks for coming back with us, Michelle. We appreciate it very much. But as you say,
sure, no problem. You know, this case has a lot of people are interested.
Absolutely. And of course, everybody in the entire country is interested in the ruling of the federal judge in Ashland yesterday that sent Kim Davis to jail. And Ray, our question of the day, and you jump in here too, please, Michelle, is was he right? U.S. District Judge David Bunning right in sending her to jail? And you, Ray, you say absolutely. What do you say, Michelle?
Well, I think Ray's right. You know, for about 25 years here in Campbell County, my father was the county clerk. And that is one of the main functions of their job. And once you take the oath of office as an elected official, your personal beliefs need to be set aside. And we can't have individuals ignoring what the judge orders. And I think that's what it comes down to. We're a society with rules, and you have to follow them.
What does contempt of court mean, Ray?
Well, that means you violated an order of the court. And
that's a serious charge, obviously.
Well, yeah. It's and he had a number of options. He could have fined her. He could have put her in jail. He could have said, okay, you got a week or you got 2 weeks to get this done, or I'm going to either fine you or throw you in jail. Let me tell you something. He did exactly what I'd have done.
Would you have done it, Michelle?
Well, I'm not in his position, but I think you're left with no choice. When you give a person the option, hey, if you don't want to do it, let your clerks do it, and she still refused.
Mm-hmm.
It sends a message to the community if he would not have locked her up, and that's not the message that we want. Is as an elected official, you can pick and choose which laws you want to follow. That's not how things work.
What happens now, Ray? Do you know if she's going to sit there until she changes her mind, or what happens?
Well, you know, that's a good question. My guess is that she can in the state court, I guess you got a limitation of 6 months on contempt. I don't know about federal court. Do you, Michelle?
I don't, but I heard that Judge Bunning was going to release her as soon as she agreed to authorize her clerks to issue the licenses, which she did not do. They went ahead and issued them on her own.
Yeah, they started this morning. They were issuing licenses today up there.
Yeah.
Without her.
Well, you know, here, let's bring this down to the our daily lives of Michelle and Ray and people in the community. We already have a group in this community and in Michelle's community that make choices about which laws not to obey, and they're called criminals.
Mm-hmm.
The criminals have decided they're not going to live by these rules that we call theft or assault or those kind of things. Mm-hmm. And that's, you know, it's really not quite that dramatic, but if you want to get right down to the nub of it, she has chosen not to obey the law.
Mm-hmm.
Whether you agree with it or you disagree with it, it is the law in our country right now, and her job is to obey the law and to do her duty. Now, if she really doesn't want to do that, she's got a choice. She could resign and say, I can't do it. My religious beliefs prevent me from doing it, and as a result, I'm resigning in protest. But that's her choice.
Right.
She doesn't have the choice not to do her job and enforce the law.
Okay, well, thank you. If you would, Michelle, for those who are tuned in this week who didn't hear last week's show, would you give us about 5 minutes of what happened in the investigation that follows? Then we'll take a break, and then we'll come back and get into the trial.
Sure. On October 12th of 2012, I got a call that there had been a shooting in Highland Heights, Kentucky, which is the city in which Northern Kentucky University is located. When I arrived at the police station that night, there was a young 21-year-old girl from Lexington, Kentucky, who admittedly shot her boyfriend. She told dispatchers and police officers that she had shot him in self-defense. When I went to the crime scene, I saw my victim, Ryan Poston. Ryan was shot 6 times, 2 times in the head area, once in the chest, under each armpit area, and 1 in the back. He had been seated, according to investigators and crime scene analysts, he had been seated behind the dining room table with his back to the wall, and he had fallen, obviously, as a result of the gunshot wounds, onto the floor, and that's where he laid until he bled to death.
You did that quickly. Last week, you were, I guess, chastised a bit by a listener by referring to one of the police officers who investigated the case as your police officer. We dealt with that last week, but I noticed that you called the victim my victim, and I think I've heard Ray do that before. Is that because these crimes are very personal to you?
Well, absolutely. This has been almost 3 years, and if I'm not fighting for Ryan, if I do not feel as if I know Ryan and I have to be his voice in court, then I'm not doing my job. Of course he is my victim. Just as his family, I consider part of my family. That's what happens in this case. I am, there are many of us prosecutors that probably do get, you know, too personally invested, but I think you have to be able to do your job. It takes a lot out of you, and you have to remember why it is that you're going into court every day and why you're fighting the fight for the victims that can't be there.
I'm going to take a break, and when we come back, Ray, I'll turn it to you to sort of lead us through the trial. And if you have a question or comment, 253-5959, touch star 590 from AT&T. And we're back 23 minutes after 9 o'clock. And our guest this morning is Prosecutor Michelle Snodgrass, Campbell County, Kentucky, Newport. And we're talking about a murder that occurred. When was the murder again?
It was on October 12th of 2012.
Okay, so Ray, I'm going to turn it over to you to question Michelle about the trial.
Okay, Michelle, those of us that try these kind of cases know that you just don't go to court, and it doesn't just happen. It requires all sorts of preparation. First thing I want to ask you about the trial is, what effect did the fact that this is such a high-profile case, got so much publicity, have on you and the case itself?
Well, I think the biggest impact was probably when we went to go pick the jury. About, well, I guess it was the weekend before we were trying to seat the jury, the Cincinnati Inquirer did a big article. I didn't read it because obviously I was working and getting ready, but a lot of our jurors had. And it was sort of a, what do you need to know about the Shayna Huber's murder trial? Which really put us in a bind when you're trying to pick a jury to go through the pretrial publicity. Who here knows about the case? Who's heard about it? Who's formed an opinion? That was probably the biggest hurdle that the media played. You know, and as far as an impact on me, it's a little disturbing each day when you're coming to work and you're getting out of your car and you're trying to get into the mindset of trying this case, and you have the TV cameras following you and the reporters wanting to ask you questions. It's difficult to deal with.
Wasn't it featured on 2020?
Oh, yes, yeah. It was. Yes. And the national media was here from 2020, 48 hours, Dateline, NBC, and they're all really nice. And before I went to law school, I was a reporter, so I understand their job. I know what they do, but it still is something that, you know, you have a camera in your face as you're walking in each morning, or you want to take a break and, you know, go down the hall and sit, and they're following you everywhere you go.
Well, that cuts down on your ability to pick your nose and that kind of stuff.
Sometimes I tell them, I just need a bathroom break. That's it.
Yeah. Now, so when you get ready to, I put together a number of topics here, and I sent it to you.
Mm-hmm.
But you do an opening statement after you pick the jury. How long did it take you to pick the jury, by the way?
We got the jury picked on the first day.
All right.
So it was really, you never know how long it's going to take.
Right.
And so we were pleasantly surprised that within one day we had them seated.
What sort of people were you looking for on your jury?
Well, you know, here in Campbell County, we do have a conservative jury pool. You know, I've been in this community my whole life, so you get to know the type of people that live here. We were looking for individuals that were going to be able to set aside their emotions and just concentrate on the facts. We had a lot of scientific evidence from crime scene analysts. We wanted individuals who were going to be able to follow and understand that and then know what type of a conclusion that led them to. So for us, it was really individuals that we knew were going to be able to separate out the emotion from the facts.
You know, Jack, one of the things that I don't ever, if I can avoid having lawyers on the jury,
you
I do.
Really?
Yeah. But, well, because I think lawyers become critics as opposed to. What about your thoughts about that, Michelle?
I would never want to have a lawyer on my jury panel. You know, they do. They criticize and they think, well, I would have done it differently, even though they might be a real estate lawyer. You know, it's just a category to avoid.
That's interesting. That never has come up before.
Well, there are a number of them. You know, for example, engineers want...
They're very analytical.
Well, here's our bird. Our standard is beyond a reasonable doubt. And I think engineers are trained to have a specific answer for everything.
Absolutely. And I agree.
And I think the reasonable doubt thing...
It's a concept they don't get.
Well, yeah, it's not the way they think.
What about doctors? Medical doctor.
Here's my gut reaction. I would worry that they would be able to pay attention. You know, just because they got so many other issues on their mind.
Interesting.
Yeah.
And in a case like this, you know, it was a 2-week trial. Obviously, a doctor's probably not going to be available to sit for a 2-week trial. I don't think that really, I've never experienced that as much as I have some of the other professions.
Ethnicity mean anything to you in this case?
No.
Trial selection, no. I mean, the jury selection.
It really doesn't. You know, it shouldn't in most cases if you have people that will agree to make a decision based on the law. If they don't agree with the law, then you can have some issues.
Here's an email, and this doesn't have anything to do with what we're talking about today, but I want to throw it out there because the guy took the time to send it to us, and you can either comment on it or not. Doesn't matter to me, but it says here, this is from Wayne, common criminals not only are the ones choosing what laws they obey, in reaction to what you said, Ray, Obama's federal prosecutors not enforcing contempt of Congress against IRS's Lois the Liar Lerner. Maybe Obama and his federal prosecutors should be considered criminals too, because they have apparently decided not to prosecute Lois Lerner on contempt of Congress. Any comment on that?
You know,
reaction at all?
I have wondered those kind of things throughout this administration.
Really?
I mean, there are people that are, they should have created some special prosecutors to deal with the IRS and that woman, and they should do the same thing with whatever's going on with these Clinton emails.
Yeah.
I mean, that just, come on, if it's a violation of suspicion, suspected violation of the law, let's get with it, because you're setting a pretty crummy example if you don't follow the trail.
We'll be right back. Back with Ray Larson in the studio with us, and Michelle Snodgrass on the phone from her office in Campbell County. And I understand that you and I were criticized this week for interrupting too much.
Yeah.
Okay, it's all on you, okay. Michelle. We're going to shut the hell up.
Well, you can ask my husband about that. I think he probably gets criticized a few times for doing that as well.
What about when you make an opening statement? First of all, what is an opening statement in a trial, and what are you trying to achieve in this case?
Well, it's really just the roadmap. It's to sort of give the jury an idea of what it is that they are going to hear. So you try not to give them everything, but enough to draw their attention in and to really lay out what our case is going to be. So in this case, the purpose of our opening statement was, number one, to give them an idea of how important social media was going to be in this case, the comments that were made by the defendant, the statements that she made to the police. You know, when she said 11 days before she actually shot Ryan, when she told a friend that while at the shooting range, she wants to turn around and shoot and kill Ryan and act like it's an accident. That to us was really huge as to what her mindset was a short time before the murder. We also wanted to let the jury know a little bit about the scientific evidence, because we were fortunate enough to have a crime scene analyst come in from New Jersey. The same crime scene analyst who worked on the sniper shooting for American Sniper in Texas. Amazing police officer who analyzed our crime scene and was really able to put back together, to piece back together what happened in that condominium on October 12th.
What did the defense, make an opening statement?
They did, and pretty much from the beginning, they said, this is self-defense. That is what happened on that day. It was really Ryan Poston attacking Shayna Hubers, and Shayna did the only thing that she was able to do, which is defend herself. That's what the defense, the story that the defense wanted out there from the beginning. The hurdle that they had is that the scientific evidence really didn't back up that story. The crime scene didn't back up that story, and quite frankly, their client didn't back up that story.
You told me one time, Ray, that the majority of jurors make up their mind who's guilty or innocent after opening statements.
85%.
That blows my mind.
Yeah.
Well, that's how important those opening statements are.
Yeah, and here's the deal. If you tell the jury in an opening statement that that the evidence will be this, 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 and this, and then that the trial, the evidence is only this and this, they will hold that against you.
And I think that's really important for us prosecutors. You know, I had a couple of other attorneys from my office in there taking notes, and we requested a copy of the defense attorney's opening statement. There were a couple of promises that were made by them that the evidence would show. And lo and behold, as I'm getting ready 2 weeks down the road to do my closing argument, which when you have a long trial, that becomes even more important, I went back through the promises that they made. And Ray's right. If they didn't come through, if they didn't follow through on those promises, I was going to bring that up. And I did bring it up. I said, you were going to hear all these things. And guess what? You sat here for 2 weeks and you didn't hear it. So that was really important in this case. And, you know, you've got to be very careful not to make a promise that you cannot keep.
What was, how did you determine, how many witnesses did you call? Do you remember?
Oh, I don't even remember. I think we started, you know, when you start preparing, you have everybody who knew anybody involved in the case. I think our police officers probably interviewed 70 plus witnesses. Obviously, not everyone is relevant. You have a lot of people that could end up repeating themselves. I think we ended up around 30 witnesses in our case in chief, and that would include expert witnesses that we had as well.
One of the tough decisions for me in every case I try is, how do you deal? What's the order? Do you start at the crime and go back? Or do you work up to the crime?
And it's, every yeah. case is different. And in this case, we knew that what we needed the jury to see within the first half hour of this trial was Shayna Hubers. They needed to hear her words and see her actions. So regardless of what order we called witnesses in, we knew that the first witness had to be the individual that, number one, put in the 911 call, and then number two, showed the video recording of her at the police station. There was nothing else I could have presented to this jury that would have had more of an impact than those two items. And the reason is because in her 911 call, she says one thing to the dispatchers, that she grabbed the gun out of Ryan Poston's hand and then turned it on him. Just a short time later at the police department, she says, I picked the gun up off of the table. So immediately, the jury will hear that she's not keeping her story straight. You know, when you're telling the truth, facts are real easy to remember. It's only when you're embellishing or, you know, trying to make things sound better that you kind of get confused on the facts. So what we did was we called the main detective and had him enter in the 911 recording and then the recording of Shayna at the police department. And interesting that, you know, after a trial, you're able to talk to jurors and to see what they thought about the case and the evidence. And the jurors I talked to said that watching her on that recording, they knew. They knew what their decision was going to be.
Huh. You have said that you had a lot of scientific evidence. Tell us a little bit about what sort of scientific evidence that you produced to prove a case beyond a reasonable doubt against Shayna Hubers.
Well, in a case like this, obviously you have medical testimony. You have the medical examiners. Not so much the cause of death. We know Ryan Poston was shot to death. But what was more important to us was the angle and the trajectory. You know, which way was the bullet coming at the time that it entered Ryan Poston's body? Each and every one of the six bullets entered his body at a downward angle, meaning that the shooter was higher than Ryan at some point in time. So why is that important? It's important because it shows that our theory of the case is correct, that he was sitting. So when you're talking about self-defense, how are you defending yourself against a man who's sitting behind a table and he's up against a wall? So that became very important to us because it contradicted her story that Ryan had knocked her down on the ground and she had to grab the gun. It just didn't make sense scientifically. The other thing that was really important to us was the blood spatter and blood pattern. I think, Ray, on your website, you might have a picture of the table where Ryan Poston was sitting at the time he was shot and killed. There is a lot of blood on the table. However, it's really close to where he was sitting. If he was standing and reaching over the table towards Shayna, we would have expected the blood to be in a different point on that table. And finally, what was interesting to us was the lack of blood. There was no blood up high on the wall behind Ryan Poston. So if he would have been standing at the time he was shot, there would have been blood behind him. The lack of blood spoke volumes, according to our crime scene reconstructionists. And that's really important.
He was shot in the head a couple of times, right?
Yes.
Was it a through and through, or did it happen, or did the bullet remain inside his skull?
One of them was through and through. The other ones remained within his skull.
Have to take a break. 253-5959. Touch star 590 from AT&T. Toll free from anywhere. 1-877-7. Ray Larson's with us in the studio this morning. Prosecutor Michelle Snodgrass is on the phone, and we've got 6 minutes, Ray.
Okay, Michelle, did the defendant, Shayna Hubers, take the stand and testify?
She did not. And quite frankly, from my perspective, that was probably the best decision they could have made. She talks way too much. She says too much. Her statement to the police went on for over 2 hours, and they didn't ask her a question. She just kept talking. And when there's an awkward moment of silence, she feels as if she needs to fill it with more words. So I don't think it would have benefited her any to get on that stand. So probably a good choice on their part.
Do you think jurors think that maybe that's a sign of guilt because you're not willing to get up and defend yourself? I know they're not supposed to, but do they?
Well, they're told not to, and the jury instructions say not to. This case was a little bit different, though, because although she didn't get up and say anything at the trial, she said plenty on October 12th. And I think that's what they concentrated on. I don't know if they could really get beyond that. You know, on this video recording of her, when the police officers left the room, at one point she was crying to the police officer. And the minute he stepped out of the room, she stopped. It was like somebody flipped a switch. It was so telling that what she was saying and doing wasn't real. She was putting on a show. She was trying to be whatever they wanted her to be at that point in time. Later in the recording, when the officers were out of the room, she actually pirouetted. She twirled. Mm. She was dancing, and I've never seen anything like that. At one point, she also even said, I did it, and snapped her fingers in the air. You know, this is someone who wants the jury to believe that they're acting in self-defense, but their actions speak to the exact opposite.
One of the comments that she apparently made had to do with the fact that he was twitching. What was that one?
Well, after she shot him the first couple of times, he was making noises and twitching, and she couldn't stand to watch him twitch anymore, so she shot him a few more times to put him out of his misery, were her exact words.
Now, Jack, that sort of militates against a self-defense
sort claim. Of, yeah, no kidding.
Yeah.
And
well, I don't think you need to defend yourself against a twitching man who is gurgling on his own blood.
Right. Well, okay, so you made your... what did the defense say in their closing argument?
They kept with the same self-defense, and what I was surprised about was they actually did sort of like a little reenactment where co-counsel on this case got down on the ground to show what it would have looked like from Shayna Huber's perspective. They said that Ryan Poston knocked her on the ground, and from her position on the floor, she reached up with the gun and shot him.
Well, just
surprised
listening.
That they did that because there is no trajectory of a bullet that matches that story. So what they acted out was contradicted by the physical evidence. Their own medical expert said that all the shots were at a downward angle. She could not have been on the floor firing up towards Ryan Poston.
What about, so it's almost like that's my story and I'm sticking to it, kind of a closing argument.
Absolutely, yes.
How long was the jury out?
They were out about 5 hours. You know, this was a 2-week long trial. So going over all the evidence, you never know what they're going to do. And I'm assuming it's the same in Fayette County, Ray, but they went back to deliberate late in the evening. Maybe it was around 6 o'clock. So we have to provide them food. So they were ordering pizza. So you know that when the jury's getting food, they're going to wait to eat before they start their deliberation. So we knew it was going to be a while. We had no idea how long.
Did they ask any questions?
They did ask a question about something on the video recording that they wanted to see again. And the way that the law works in Kentucky is you cannot just watch bits and pieces of it. They would have to come back into the courtroom and view the entire recording all over again. So while we were waiting to see what we were going to do, were we going to get the TV set up, how are we going to play this, they came back with another note and said, you know what, we've got a verdict.
And the verdict was?
The verdict was guilty of murder.
Okay, now, and they recommended a sentence of 40 years?
Yes, 40 years, and as you know, Ray, in the state of Kentucky, parole eligibility would be capped at 20 years. So basically, after she serves 20 years, she will be eligible to meet with the parole board. She will be a young woman. She will be 41 years old at the time she's able to meet the parole board.
Where is she now, do you know?
Right now, she's still in our Campbell County Detention Center.
Now, when she was finally sentenced, what was the comment she made about makeup?
Well, I just heard this is that, you know, she is looking forward to going downstate because she can order makeup on the commissary at Peewee Valley.
Michelle, thank you so much for being with us.
Thank you. I appreciate
it. Great job.
Stand by. We have an update from the Information Center live with Lee's next. He's got Republican Attorney General candidate Whitney Westerfield with him. Have a great weekend. I'll be back Monday morning at 6:05 Central.